Collaboration is the topic of the day. Sally and I discuss a number of tools and technologies that are available from the big players like Microsoft and Google, but also some niche players that will help you collaborate with other people virtually and online. We talk about some scheduling software that'll make getting together a lot easier. Lots of great listener feedback. Please stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with the Wells Tech Podcast. This is episode 276 for Tuesday, February 19th, 2013. And you've tuned into a show that talks about technology and ministry and where those two meet. And we're happy that you did join us. And I'm also happy to welcome back my co-host, Sally Draper from Frigid, Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. Hi, Sally.
Yeah, it is cold here today. Good morning, Martin. We are enjoying the winds of Minnesota because we had
welcome kind of back winter
blustery evening last night and a few snow drifts. The schools are calling and canceling today.
So, oh, really? So yeah. Kids no school today?
Well, right now we have a 2-hour late start in Sleepy Eye, but MVL and New Ulm canceled. So I think the roads are the problem. So
yeah, so your two oldest are sleeping in.
They are. My little guy's hoping that he gets canceled too. So
That would be a bummer. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're on show 276, rolling on towards show 300, which we're going to be doing this summer. So we've got to start making some plans for that. We'll actually be face-to-face in real time for that show at Synod Convention. So I'm looking forward to that.
That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So we need to collaborate a little bit on that show, which is actually a nice segue to the theme for this show, which is digital collaboration. And we have an interview later on that talks a little bit about how he uses some digital tools to collaborate with who he needs to collaborate with. But really, because of the society that we live in and busy schedules and distance between people now, collaborating on the web is really an important tool in the tool belt, as it were, in ministry, to be able to get together and work on things in as seamless a way as possible. And the tools that we have available really make that possible today.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, Martin. And because of these awesome tools, many of them free, you can do it with ease, actually. And I get this question occasionally from people, you know, I need to bring together a group for whatever purpose. And what do you recommend? And there's a lot of different ways you can go. And just in the course of doing this podcast, we've seen it kind of change and grow over the last several years. So what we want to do is just kind of pull together some of these tools. So if you are looking maybe to bring together your pastors who are in your area for a distance meeting, or bring together your church council for sharing of online documents, or even in a classroom kind of setting, bringing together your school to work collaboratively on a document, or to connect with other teachers at the same grade level or teaching the same curriculum as you. There's just lots of ways that you might want to build a group and then be able to talk to each other, share documents, all kinds of different things.
Any kind of project or planning activity, I can think of VBS, I can think of, you know, Sunday school teacher meetings, you know, boards and committees that meet, those that are putting together anniversary dinners, you know, all that kind of stuff where that requires kind of ongoing activity versus just a point in time where you're going to say, you know, we're going to get together and do this. You know, collaborating over time is very much possible in the cloud environment.
Definitely. As you were describing that, I was thinking of our LWMS board in the area, you know, and how these ladies always have to come together for these meetings. And certainly this isn't going to do away with face-to-face meetings, but it is going to allow you to have a comfortable, secure place that everyone can access and share.
Yeah, a great example going on right now is we're redoing the Lutheran School's website. And we've got about 12 volunteers working on different areas. So without the technologies that we're going to talk about, that would be virtually impossible because these people are all over the country. I'm beginning to work a lot more with the folks in multi-language publications, and their office is in El Paso. And they have an administrator who is actually the interview today, Brad Wardell, who's in Tokyo. So without these collaborative tools, that kind of work would be very, very difficult. You know, I think in the recent past, even email has been the way to do that. And that's just not very efficient. There's a back and forth, there's a delay, and it's a very slow plotting process. But some of these other tools really enable or energize the ability to meet and talk real time sometimes if you want, to work on the same document at the same time, to see what each other's seeing. Just some cool tools.
Definitely. So as we began to build this list, Martin, we kind of organized it in a couple of different ways. One was just the platforms that are available, because there are collections of tools in various platforms. And then we kind of did some picking and choosing of specific software that is really good, like you said, for project management or collaboration. And so maybe we should dive into those platforms, the first of which we make use of, kind of near and dear to our hearts, and that's Google. And Google offers quite a vast collection of tools through their Google Sites, Google Groups, through their Google Drive product, where you can share documents. We can be in the same document, Martin, in two different locations and see each other typing. And the things I type will be in one color and things you type will be in another. And so so literally editing simultaneously on various documents and things.
Yep. So document would be one area of collaboration, and that can be documents, spreadsheets, PowerPoints, forms, you know, all those are in the Google Drive product, as well as, you know, any kind of document that you want to throw up there. Now, you can't multi-edit some of those, like a Word document, for instance, but you can share that document and continue to work on it together. Mm-hmm. So publications or documents are one thing. The other is kind of real-time communication like we're doing now. If you wanted to have an online meeting, you could use Google Hangouts. It's free. You can have up to 10 people at a time. There's screen sharing, there's chatting, there's all kinds of things that they're beginning to add into the tool. You can even record the session like we're doing.
Yep. And you can go live so other people can watch your stream as well. Now, those things used to just be for a select few Google accounts, but now they're rolled out to everyone. So you can use these tools for free. So like I mentioned, I thought of Pastor Rob Gunther up there in Kenai, Alaska, and the fact that they get together for some of their pastor meetings across these really great distances as they're really spread out. But they use that kind of technology to connect and have their pastor meetings. So,
and very easy to do. You obviously need an account, but once you've done one, it's pretty easy to continue to just jump in there and, you know, at a moment's notice. You know, really just send a quick email or chat message and away you go.
And then, I'm sorry, the other component would be a Google Calendar that you could make use of. So you could schedule your meetings and your events and things like that. And then I mentioned at the beginning, Google Groups or Google Sites or both, where you can pull all of these things together and have a website around it. People can reference and see all these components on the page at once, kind of thing. So, you have kind of a landing place.
Yeah, two other Google products. You mentioned Google Groups, because then you can, that's more of a traditional listserv or email group kind of thing where you can carry on these communications via email. The good thing about it is it's multidimensional, so anybody in the group gets the message. And then some of the other products that are used can also be, put to good use here as well. You mentioned Calendar and Drive and Gmail, of course, but you've got Google Plus. So that can act as a community or a group where you can come together and share videos. You can comment on posts. those kinds of things. So,
and I guess probably Google Photo as well, if you wanted to have shared images and stuff. It's all in one big happy Google family.
But Google's not the only game in town.
That's right. Not to slight others, Microsoft has a lot of the same kind of components built into their Office 365 and Live SkyDrive. So you have document storage and collaboration with the Microsoft feel to it online in the cloud, and even a little bit of the SharePoint capabilities, depending on what level you go to with the Office subscription.
Yeah, and it's not, and this is not free, although SkyDrive, you can edit documents and share documents. But if you wanted to get kind of the SharePoint component, which is that intranet, what Connect is built on, that's going to cost you a little bit, but it's not overly expensive. And then you should, and since we're talking about Microsoft, you need to remember that Skype is now a Microsoft product. So you get the Google Hangouts kind of approach there too. And Skype's been around a long time and very easy to use, and document sharing, those kinds of things. Just a good suite of products that Microsoft has built up.
Definitely. And then finally, in terms of platforms, I think it would be remiss of us if we didn't mention the fact that social networking allows you a platform for this kind of thing as well. In particular, thinking about Facebook, you can have private groups on Facebook. And we do this in our congregation with our ladies' prayer group. So the group is completely private. It's not searchable. People can't stumble upon it and join it or anything like that. We basically opt in the people that we want to be a part of it. And then it's the Facebook interface. It's integrated with your Facebook account and the other things you do on Facebook, but it's just for a select group of people. So you can do image sharing and video sharing. You can obviously have discussions back and forth. You know, we've talked about, I think in the past, some document management through Facebook too, but I can't say that I've ever really done that or that's really taken off on the Facebook platform. But
no, I think you're still probably better off using tools like Dropbox or those kinds of things.
Right. But definitely got some potential there. And we'll have a link in the show notes to their help center. So if you're interested in exploring that possibility, you could look there.
And you've been playing around a few things, too, that fall into this category, right?
I have. I have a couple of things to share. My goal for the month of February is to really understand BuddyPress a lot more. BuddyPress is a WordPress plugin that allows you to basically have your own private label social networking kind of site. And I haven't gotten as far with it as I'd like, but my installation is updated to the 1.7 beta version now, which they say plays better with WordPress themes and things, because this is the out-of-the-box look is kind of plain and simple with BuddyPress. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, when I announced last month that I was going to be looking at BuddyPress, I heard from a member at Christ in Baxter, Minnesota, and he had read the reviews and he thought Elge was a better tool set, kind of parallel to BuddyPress, but a standalone installation instead of on top of WordPress. And he's using it for their member site, another way for them to collaborate around Bible studies, around their boards and committees and things. So if you want to check out the Christ Lutheran Baxter Elge site, I think it's a really great example of a customized collaborative environment for members only kind of thing.
Cool.
So obviously you aren't going to be able to log in
Intranet,
exactly. Mm-hmm. But you can at least see their front page and see the kind of structure that they've built here, the different groups that they've set up and things to that effect. I also installed an Elch site, and so just right out of the box, I got a lot of junk comments on there, apparently, but right out of the box, you can have it up and running pretty easily as well. So we'll see and report back further as I play a little bit more with my installs.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Then, so that's it for platforms. We should talk a little bit about the available online software that is available. We mentioned kind of the Googles and the Microsofts, but there's all kinds of little niche tools and products that allow for collaboration, online collaboration that meet different needs. Project management would be one. So I mentioned, you know, collaboration is really essential if you're going to manage an ongoing project of really any size. And there's a couple that fall in that category. One that has been around for a long time that's very popular. And I don't know if there's a free version. I think there is. It's from Basecamp. I think we'll have a link in the show notes. But that one's really popular. We work with a lot of vendors, and a number of them use that to manage projects, which allow email communication. It allows file storage, those kinds of things. So it's probably one of the best online project management tools out there. So
looks like they have a 60-day free trial, and then the pricing starts at $20 a month for Basecamp.
Yeah, so depending on what your needs are. Mm-hmm. Another one that I know is free is called Trello, T-R-E-L-L-O. I think I talked about this last week, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And, you know, very simple, kind of fun approach to project management, and I think would meet the needs of congregations and schools, you know, really well. So it's, you know, a card-based system that it's really easy to figure out. So it's not going to kind of crush the project management side of things so much that you're not interested in kind of keeping things up. So,
right.
You want to talk about the next category?
Sure. Another category that is near and dear to our heart is mind mapping. And that's basically how we plan every single episode of Wells Tech. It's the concept of starting with a central topic and then building off of it in all different directions, not being very linear, but exactly. Free form and easy for brainstorming and things like that. And there are collaborative ways where you can do that online as well. The tool that we use is from MindJet, and basically their whole tool set is now turned to incorporating that online capability. They called it Connect at one point, but now I think it's just MindJet. Mind Manager allows you to collaborate online. It's a fee-based product, obviously, but there are other Web 2.0 tools, MindDomo and MindMeister, that allow you to do the same thing and don't necessarily have fees associated, at least for a few maps that you put out there. So, I'm not sure where we'd be. 276 shows in, we've done every single one in a mind map. I could even share a peek at our mind map today. I think I'd be pretty lost without it. As we start doing this kind of brainstorming and we throw out, for instance, ideas just for today's show, after we threw out all these ideas, then they began to develop and we could easily move things around and reorganize It makes a big difference for collaborative projects, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's indispensable, I think, for this kind of thing, especially if you're in development and just kind of fuzzy on, you know, what the details might be. And then it can gradually take its shape and organization over time. So I think that's one of its sweet spots. A great collaborative tool. Another category that is, maybe it's not as popular today as it was maybe a couple years ago, but I think it still has its uses, and those are wikis. We have our own wiki, wellstechwiki.wells.net, where we invite people to come in and add their content. So again, truly collaborative, where you can come in, and obviously most people know Wikipedia, collaborative encyclopedia. So if you have the need to create a resource, maybe it's an online textbook, maybe it's something, another kind of document, wikis might be a good tool to use. And the three big ones out there, MediaWiki, which is an open source wiki platform, which is what Wikipedia runs on. Wikispaces, which we've talked about in the past, that's one that a lot of educational groups use. And then PBWorks, which I think went pay for. I don't know if that's free anymore, but yeah, very full featured. So those are just three examples. There's plenty of them out there.
So I'd like to compare wikis to more of a editable website. Everyone contributes and makes pages, and it's a web-based output as opposed to collaborative documents that you might use in your SkyDrive or your Google Docs or Google Drive or whatever. And then finally, we've already touched on this category, but web conferencing, being able to share screens to see each other via video cameras and talk for free via the web. And we mentioned Skype as well as Google Hangouts as being options to use with your group and your collaborative efforts. Another one that we both enjoy using is join.me. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the video camera kind of capabilities or the voice over IP, I don't believe.
No, it does. It has VoIP. Yep.
Okay.
Built in.
But it primarily is really great for sharing screens, and it has something extra in that you can give control to someone. My example is my mom down in Mississippi and how I like to work on her computer, and we can both go to join.me. She can tell me her little number and I can be on her computer and controlling her mouse and running diagnostics or whatever it may need using join.me. It's super quick and easy. When you initiate the site, it asks you, are you sure you want to do this? And by clicking OK, it does a quick download and installs whatever it needs to make the magic happen. And I have been very pleased with the user interface and the reliability.
Very snappy. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of join.me. So yeah,
they have both VoIP, and they also have a toll number that people can call in. So I was just using it the other day.
Okay. So all kinds of platforms and tools for online collaboration. It shouldn't be a stumbling block to you if you have a group that needs to meet online. It's more probably the planning of what tools you want to use and what platform and that kind of thing, and then just go for it and enjoy the free price tag of many of it.
Absolutely. As we mentioned, we sat down with Brad Wardell, who's the new administrator for multi-language publications handling Asia, East Asia in particular. And he happened to be stateside last week or 2 weeks ago, and I had the opportunity to sit down with him in my office and do a quick interview, especially about his new work and online collaborating, which is really important for his work because all the translators that work with him are in different countries. Let's listen to our interview with Brad.
Joining us on the podcast today, Pastor Brad Wardell from Tokyo, Japan. Good afternoon, Brad.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for being here. You're kind of on a whirlwind tour from Tokyo. You were at Mission and Ministry earlier this week, did some preaching and some teaching, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe to reacquaint our listeners with the work there, give us a little bit of a description of what you've been doing, first of all, in your ministry, and then what specifically you're doing in Tokyo today.
Mm-hmm. I have a dual role in Tokyo. Right now I'm serving the LECC, the Lutheran Evangelical Christian Church in Japan, mm-hmm. as a pastor, as a missionary, as a friendly counselor, and I give about half of my time to that work right now.
Mm-hmm.
The other half of my time right now goes to Asia Publications. I'm the new coordinator for multi-language publications in Asia.
Okay. And a little bit about MLP, or multi-language publications. That group has been around for some time, but their primary work is what?
Their primary work is producing and publishing and distributing good Lutheran materials for our world mission fields.
Okay, good. Wife and kids, I assume?
I have one wife and five children, but only four of them live in Japan right now. Our oldest is back in America as a college student.
Mm, you got a chance to visit with her since you're visiting.
Saw her last night.
Okay, great. So let's talk a little bit about the process of creating and distributing translated publications in Asia. What do you think is the hardest part about that whole process on either the creation or the distribution side?
Mm-hmm. The hardest part is keeping the project moving along. It's a many-step process.
Right.
Somebody translates it first. It gets sent to somebody to proofread. It comes back with some corrections. Mm-hmm. Somebody else proofreads it. Those corrections get entered. And so the file's being shared and edited, and it's really a challenge to keep everything in order and to keep the project moving along.
And that's your job.
Right.
Okay, to keep the ball rolling, mm-hmm. so that nothing gets stuck,
mm-hmm.
So you unstuck or unstick projects. How do you determine what gets translated in the first place?
The best way to determine that is to ask the people in the countries, what do you need? What can you use?
Okay. And what do you normally hear, let's say, in Japan?
Mm-hmm. We publish things on four different levels. We mm-hmm. publish things that are good for outreach. We publish things that are good for discipleship, people mm-hmm. who just want to learn about the Bible. We publish things that are good for the nurture of people who are baptized Christians.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also working on publishing things that can be used for theological education, preparing pastors for ministry.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the technology that makes all this go. Obviously, you are not just doing Japanese publications, but you are, you know, responsible for the entire, you know, Asia area, South Asia or Southeast Asia. So that includes what, Korea and China and Thailand and, you know, India, you know, all those places.
Nepal and Pakistan, okay. Indonesia.
So, and all of your translators are not obviously living in Japan. So you've got to probably be using some technological tools to bring that team together and make that process go.
Mm-hmm. All of the translation teams live in their respective countries.
Right.
And so the only team that lives in Japan is the Japan translation team.
Right.
But what we use is the Connect, the Microsoft SharePoint, mm-hmm. for file management.
Sure.
We use it for task management, project management. And the various countries send their file to us, mm-hmm. and then we make sure at our office in Tokyo that it gets put in the proper place.
Okay. And how's that going so far? I assume you're pretty early on in this process.
We're early on in the process, but it's going well, and now it's just a matter of getting all of the individual countries to do what we want them to
right.
do so that we can get the files and then take care of them.
Sure. We got that kick-started a little bit when we were out in Hong Kong at the mm-hmm. Asia Translators Conference.
That right? was a wonderful blessing to introduce to all the people there how technology can be useful.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about digital publications themselves. A lot of the work that you do is for physical publications, mm-hmm. paper, mm-hmm. That gets printed and shipped and distributed. In your mind, where do digital publications play a role? Where's that headed?
Mm-hmm. There's great opportunity for digital publications because more people have devices that can access digital files.
Right.
So we're just beginning to do that as well. But we can do e-books. We mm-hmm. can do presentations of material in digital format that people can actually do an online course
right.
or they can do it like a distance learning study of a book that's digital rather than
sure.
in print.
Okay. Why do you think it's important that that's a part of your strategy?
Well, it saves money for one thing. It's not so expensive to print.
Right. And, distribution costs go way down, of course. Production costs are probably still the same, right? You still have to go through the same process to get something mm-hmm. translated.
The final production, of
right.
course, the cost is lower.
Right.
And as I mentioned, more people can access it.
People probably want it that way.
And even in third world countries,
right.
people have cell phones and smartphones and they can access it.
Yeah. You're really dealing in third world countries that have first world technology
exactly.
sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the iPads, I'm sure, though, you see those on the streets of Tokyo,
mm-hmm.
and we see those all over China, certainly, in cell phones and such. So
there's one other important reason, and that is it's difficult sometimes to get materials into some countries.
Sure.
And you can't send religious materials into the country,
mm-hmm.
and all materials need to be published in the country, which sometimes is more expensive.
Right.
And sending digital files in is something that's quite easy.
Okay, good. Maybe to wrap up, any short or even long-range goals that you've got on your plate? You're pretty new to the position.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're forcing yourself to think through the strategic approach and the planning process. What's occurred to you that really needs to be short or long-range goals?
Well, ongoing goals are for us to continue to learn how to use the technology.
Sure.
And make sure that we are using it
mm-hmm.
and make sure that all of the other players are not neglecting to use the technology.
Right.
What happens is if you don't know how to use it, you stop using it,
right.
and then a valuable resource is lost.
Okay, great. Brad, thank you for your time. Blessings on your work. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Thanks to Brad for spending a few minutes. He was kind of back-to-back interviews. He was upstairs doing an interview for, I don't know if it was for Wells Connection, but it was with Peg Thiele. So he was all warmed up for me.
Awesome. Well, it was neat that you guys actually got to be in the same place.
And, that doesn't happen very often.
No, right? It doesn't.
Right. So. Sally, we should move right along to our picks of the week.
Excellent. I have a pick for you that's EdTech oriented. So for teachers, listen up. It's called SmithsonianQuest.org. And this was just recently released from the Smithsonian. County and Institute museums. And basically it allows students to sign up and go on Quest. And they kind of coupled it with their traditional website where they give people goals to go and read articles or explore certain areas of the website and then come back and report on those. So to get started, teachers will want to go to SmithsonianQuest.org, and there's a sign-up process. Basically, you indicate the name of your school and your position there and that kind of thing. They send you an email. You go and register further with a sign-up code that they send you, and ultimately, you land on your account page. Which is basically a different URL, shout.smithsonianquest.org. And when you're logged in there, then you can begin to do the quest. And I will tell you with the student sign-up process that they want each student to create their own account and use this code that they send you. And they ask the student's age, and if they're under age 13, they ask for the parent's email in case, you know, to make the parents aware because of the rules around children under age 13. Mm-hmm. It does say that if you as a teacher have permission from the parents for them to do this, then you can use your own email. So I typically set up my own student accounts. I don't have them set up accounts with an email address. Instead, I use my own emails internally and stuff. And so it does allow for that, but it's a step-by-step process to get each of your accounts set up. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, when they have their login, again, they'll land on a page where they can add an avatar for themselves and begin to explore the quests that are available. And let's see if I can get to where the quests are. We'll click on Browse Quest. And as an example, and one thing the whole site is very geared toward is towards earning badges. So mm-hmm. they have a badge for each quest you undertake. And they have a wide variety of quests. And this is geared towards students of all ages, from kindergarten through 12th grade. So the quests are available depending on their grade level. I'm logged in as a sixth grade student, and I might look at a particular quest called Oral Historian. And it's kind of focused on maritime studies. And so there are three things you have to complete to do your quest. One is you have to go to their website, as I mentioned, and listen and read various things about life at sea. And once you've done that, they asked you to submit 1 to 2 paragraphs. So it's not just, absorbing the information. You have to think through it and type up some stuff to go with it. As a sixth grader, who did you listen? Who did you explore, and what did they have in common, and how did they differ, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's some reflection activity to it. The second portion is called Snap It for this particular badge, and they actually want you to go out and take some photographs of maritime activity in your area and describe it as if you're the historian documenting it. Mm-hmm. So you type up the assignment, and you actually attach a photo to it. And
you have a lot of maritime activity in Sleepy Eye there?
We have Sleepy Eye Lake. And right now we have, it's frozen, and there's a lot of ice fishers out on there doing some maritime ice fishing. So yeah, we could make that happen. So I just think it's really cool that they have a real person on the other end of this. So it's not just an automated thing, but the students are actually reflecting on what they're learning and submitting information to someone for review and things like that. And this is just one example of one badge at the sixth grade level. So I think that Smithsonian's put a lot of time and effort into
this. Cool.
There's a lot of potential here for those educators out there that want to introduce this to their classroom. Maybe make it a summer project to work through some badges yourself and mm-hmm. get a better understanding of how they work. But I think you're going to be pleased with what they offer here at SmithsonianQuest.org.
Nice. Kind of a lesson in a box. Beautiful.
Yeah.
They've just quality stuff. Good stuff.
Definitely.
Okay. My pick is something that solves a problem. Problem we were having actually just the other day, where every 3 months we get together all of the technology directors from my office here, but also the four Synod schools, and trying to find a day or a time when we can all get together is just a nightmare. And this one was in particular a real problem issue. So Sue Holtz at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary was the one who was trying to coordinate this. We kind of rotate leadership of it, and she was just going back and forth. And we probably traded 10 emails trying to find a time and never did find one. So I suggested to her, well, why don't you use Doodle? And Doodle kind of takes that that pain and suffering from scheduling and creates a little web app, or has created a little web app that allows you to plug in your available time. So you're the meeting organizer, and then send out an email. And it doesn't even require a login to do this. So you title the meeting, you say, I'm available, you know, February 26th from 12 to 2, and February 27th from 9:15 to 11:15, and March 1st from 2:45 to 4:45. Then you send out this, you hit the button, you say who you want to send it to, and they go to the site, they click on the link, they can put their name in. And they can say, you know, click which boxes are available to them. And they can you can either set it up so that it's just a click a box, or it can be yes or no or yes but. And the yes but can be, I can make it happen, but I'd prefer not to, you know, kind of a, you know, maybe kind of a thing. And then what happens is that the organizer gets all this aggregate feedback, and it comes together in a list. And then it's very easy to go down each column and say, you know, this is the one that works best. Then they can send out the email saying, you know, we're going to do it here. Works very cool. If you get an account, which is also free, you can even connect this up to your own calendar. So it can be nicely integrated with Google Calendar or Outlook or Yahoo or whatever calendar system you have, so that you can compare it right to your calendar as a request comes in, or build a request from your calendar and send that out. So very cool tool. I should mention that this is not the first time this has been a pick of the week. Gail Potratz picked this about 3 years ago, and it's still a great tool. So it was just really relevant to me. And we had some listener feedback from Rachel Pearson, who talked about another tool which is very similar, called You Can Book Me. Mm-hmm. And very similar concept. I think this works. I haven't used it recently, but I know that it works with your Google Calendar, where right. You can, you know, block out different times. And I think she said she used it for parent-teacher visits, mm-hmm. Where she would say, you've got these slots available, and she would have her parents go in and say, you know, let me reserve this spot or this spot or this spot. So I think that's the... I think that was her feedback, right?
Right. She posted this on our DIGO group, and one thing she said, like you said, was hooking it to the Google Calendar was really important to her. And then there was another comment from Mike Marquard, who said, I use this for home visits. So this is a pastor making home visits. And
he's a teacher.
Okay, Mike, I'm sorry. Mark, yep. And it worked great, but he said the only drawback was it didn't really care where people were located.
Right.
So he was crisscrossing the county because people scheduled their own meetings and wasn't super efficient with the actual location of those home visits. But sounds like a great tool for that kind of purpose.
Yeah, and very easy to use, and it's... that's kind of the key. It can't be hard for somebody to get in and and schedule, either create the schedule or sign up for something. So thanks for the feedback from Mike and Rachel.
Definitely. Speaking of Rachel, we should jump into our community feedback.
Absolutely.
And Rachel had a couple of other links to share with us. Let me switch my screen share. One is to a one-hour webinar that you can view. It was recorded, and it's called Integration Isn't Enough, Redefining the Innovative Classroom. And I was excited about this because our friend Chad Kafka is part of this discussion. Chad gets around in a lot of places. This is actually from the
We bring him up
Hill.
Every show now.
Yeah. And looks like they were talking about, they called it an interesting term, device agnostic tools. Mm-hmm. So, you know, moving away from the concept that this is an iPad school or a Chromebook school, but actually how to just integrate technology regardless of what device you're making use of. So mm-hmm. I'm sure that was an interesting conversation and one worth an hour of professional development time, perhaps, to review that webinar.
Beautiful.
Next up, Rachel shared a link and switched gears from an Edutopia article called Suggested Laptop Agreements for Middle School Families. So if you are looking at a one-to-one initiative in your school, this article may give you some ideas about, you know, rules and things like that to put in place with middle schoolers. So they have general guidelines, care of the laptop, what homework time, what's expected of you, regarding use of the internet and social media and things like that. So good starting point, at least, to building a set of rules for a one-to-one implementation of computers.
Yeah, that whole one-to-one area is so new, and there are a lot of different ways to do it, and you really need to be careful and make sure that you've got your I's dotted and T's on your when you're putting something that expensive in the hands of an elementary school student.
Absolutely. All right, then another EdTech share from Jason Schmidt, our friend out in Omaha, Nebraska, who shared a link to the mathgoodies.com website, specifically a page for data and graphs. So if you have students studying data and graphing, bar charts, circle graphs, comparing graphs, there's all kinds of practice exercises and things. I went through a little bit of this, and what I found was once you get past the first page of a lesson, it requires you to actually establish an account with the website. So it wants an email address and that kind of thing, which isn't necessarily a drawback. I just wanted people to be aware that that's part of the process, that this website in particular wants you to sign up before you go too far with the lessons they provide for free. All right. I had a share on DIGO, and it was to the MIT app inventor, which I thought was really interesting. Martin, you said you had seen something parallel, I believe, from Google.
Yeah, I think they were probably the original creators at MIT, or vice versa. I'm not sure who created it, but it looks pretty similar with the puzzle pieces coming together to build an app.
Sure. And so basically you can work online to create an Android app. This wouldn't work for iOS apps, but for Android apps, using their online tool set to build an app. And what caught my eye was, again, the EdTech bend on this,
right,
that there's a whole area for teachers to make use of so that students can create apps. And I think that would be really exciting and empowering to students, especially if you're using some type of Android device in the classroom, that they could create their own apps, and it walks you through that process, shows you the programming that goes into that. And so if you're looking for that kind of thing, check out the MIT App Inventor. MIT does a lot of creative education stuff. They're behind the Scratch programming language as well. So,
great.
And then I think you're up, Martin, with a few picks of yours.
Yeah, I found a couple of blog posts that are worth sharing. One of them was from Church Mag, 5 Ways to Use Google Plus Hangouts on Air for Ministry. And we talked about that in our collaboration conversation earlier. Hangouts on Air is the ability to stream live to YouTube, the Hangout. And they talk about in the article 5 uses. So obviously streaming your sermon or Bible study, interactive Bible study or ministry meetings. You can have interactive counseling sessions, special events, podcasts. Imagine that. So just a quick read on different ways that you can use this free tool, maybe as a ministry enhancer in your particular situation. The next one was from educatorstechnology.com, which was a blog that I'm not really familiar with, although I've now put it in my RSS reader. They wrote an article called Using Google Docs to Facilitate a Writing Workshop. So Google Docs, and they've got a screencast here that talks through how to do that. They walk you through some of the features and functionalities of Google Docs and how it's probably a good tool, especially for those organizations that use Google apps to implement for a writing workshop exercise.
Once again, fits right in with our discussion. It seems like your picks were all about collaborating online, huh?
Yeah. And not the last one, but the last one is another topic near and dear to my heart, and that is 15 plus tools for getting things done from webdesignerdepot.com. And this is just a quick rundown of different tools, whether they be web-based or iOS or Android-based, Mac, PC, just kind of different tools. And these aren't all free, but some of them are. Remember the Milk is one that I've talked about in the past. Just kind of cool tools that you know, either sync calendars or task lists, create to-do lists, those kinds of things. Just kind of a neat list of these 15 things that, you know, if you even find one, you know, it may be worth the productivity boost of learning the product. And, you know, if it's a paid-for product, maybe that's worth it as well. So some of them I've never even heard of. So a nice little collection of tools here.
No excuses for not getting things done, huh?
Well, there's probably plenty of excuses, but not for lack of the technology that could be implemented in your system. So is that it for community feedback, Sally?
That will wrap it up for this week. Yes, sir.
Okay. Let me get off my screen share here. There we go. Next week is EdTech Week. Every month we have one week of the month, and we have a special guest on, semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. We flip-flop back and forth between Gail Potratz and Jason Schmidt. And so this is a Gail show, and we're going to be talking about flipped classrooms. We've talked a little bit on and off about flipped classrooms, but we'll be focusing on what they are and the technologies involved and some of the ins and outs of flipping your classroom. So tune in next week for that. Sally, I'm also excited that we have a new Wells featured artist on the Hit Parade, pianist Kirk Meyer, and we're going to play a Lenten-themed hymn, or listen to him play a Lenten-themed hymn, Chief of Sinners Though I Be. So welcome on board, Kirk. Glad that you agreed to let us play your music. And thank you, all of our listeners and viewers, for joining us for episode 276. Please join us for 277. Bye-bye.